episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Jokum. Jess and Matt are joining me. Jess is back in Indianapolis. How is everybody?
Good.
I'm good.
Great. Well, Jess, welcome back. Thank you to David Lighting for holding down the fort last week. He did an adequate job.
Oh, come on.
No, as I told him, he did a great job. So thanks, David, for helping out. See you in a couple weeks. One little bit of sad news to start the episode. Probably not how everybody enjoys an episode starting, but we gave him a shout out a couple weeks ago and just wanted to give our thoughts and prayers to Andrew Farmer's family. He unfortunately did pass away this weekend from cancer. So we're thinking about Becky and his parents, and I think next year Becky will be in Indianapolis and get a nice show, and we'll show around the track. So with that, plenty to go through tonight, some stuff and lots of fan questions before we get into the month of May stuff starting next week. So I will turn it over to Matt.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Andrew. We are thinking of your friends and family. Before we go on to that, if Jess wants to add any thoughts.
You guys covered it. Just I'm thinking of his family. I'm thinking of Becky. Becky, I can't wait to meet you next year, and we'll take you around and show you a good time, all in his name. So we just have you in our thoughts.
Okay. So moving on. Kind of the biggest news that came out the last week from our last episode was the kind of a comment coming out of the public. There was Porsche and their interest in coming to IndyCar, which was reported by Adam Stern. So Adam Stern had come out and said that Porsche was interested in joining IndyCar. We had heard a couple weeks ago that it was going to be a German manufacturer that would likely be the third engine manufacturer to come to IndyCar. And we were kind of speculated it might be Audi, but we didn't really know for sure. So Stern came out and said Porsche, but then Racer later came out and pumped the brakes on that and said that it may not be something that happens, as Porsche had said they weren't going to really focus on IndyCar and that they came to a decision at Long Beach to forego the 2021 season option, which is what Jay Fry and company have been aiming for. So Mike, any surprises to hear that Porsche was in the frame and now is no longer in the frame or anything like that?
I will start by saying that was the quickest turnaround from potential rumor to potential not rumor in the history of racing rumors. Usually this stuff plays out for a couple of days before it gets shot down. I think the Racer team had it the next night or the next day. So to me, it's kind of one of the I put an OEM in the same category as I put the McLaren full season thing. When it happens and we get concrete news to talk about, then I'll be excited. For now, I'm intrigued. There's lots of possibilities out there, but it's really tough to get too excited about any of them. It was cool to hear Porsche's name for, 12 hours, but I didn't really have enough time to get my hopes up about it because I saw it before I went to bed, woke up, and then the news was gone. So I don't know what Jess thinks.
I mean, I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, it was cool to see their name being thrown around, but then when I saw the rumors as to why they decided to say no, I was not disappointed, I guess, if that makes sense. Rumor is that they're saying no because IndyCar said no to hybrid cars, and that's what they were hoping to focus on. So I'm not really disappointed to see that get shot down, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. And Porsche wouldn't be my first choice out of the four or five major German manufacturers, and for them to kind of come in and say that we won't do this unless it's hybrid cars, it's kind of a I don't know, I'm trying to think of the PG-13 version of this. It takes a lot of stones for them to do that, to come in and say, we want to do it this way, and if it's not going to be that way, then we're not going to join. And for IndyCar to kind of say, I don't know about that. If that's truly what happened, then that's pretty cool. So IndyCar clearly has a vision as far as what they want. They want to increase the liters. They want to increase the horsepower. They want to increase the noise. which isn't the direction that most racing series in America, or sorry, in the world are doing right now. So yeah, I would rather have someone that comes in that's kind of on the same page as IndyCar, Honda, and Chevrolet for the future. But we can kind of touch more on hybrids here, and if we want to get Jess on this first fan question.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so our first fan question is from Michael Goodyear. Did I say that right?
Goodyear.
Goodyear, sorry, my bad.
Put the French twist on it.
Okay, so his Twitter handle is at mgoodyear007, and he wants to know what our thoughts are on having hybrids. Was it just for IndyCar? Yes, in IndyCar. I'm sorry.
I'll throw myself here first. I don't really think it's in IndyCar's best interest, at least in the near term, based on costs. You know, especially, you know, Jay Fry, Mark Miles, and co are trying to find a way to, you know, keep costs at a reasonable level here. And you know, if you add in a hybrid technology, not only is that going to increase costs for, you know, whoever this new manufacturer is, but then Chevy and Honda are, you know, maybe they decide to stick with their current engines, but maybe they decide to put in some work on the hybrid, especially if maybe the hybrid engine is so much better, and then it becomes a cost war and it leads down a bad path.
Yeah, and I guess the only reference I have is the way that F1 does it, and to me it's kind of obtuse because F1, it's just not F1's way. You know, conservative hybrid engines that sound pretty weak that only have, what is it, V6, or I can't remember what they do, but
V6, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just not the DNA of F1, and it wouldn't be the DNA of IndyCar. And I know that's just a traditionalist mindset, but I would definitely feel kind of left out if I showed up at Indianapolis and there was some half-throated hybrid making its way around the speedway. Even if the speeds were the same, it wouldn't matter. It's part of the excitement is just going for the loud engines and the brute technology and things like that. So I would be very opposed to hybrids in IndyCar unless it didn't compromise what IndyCar's objectives as set forth by Jay Fry for 2021 were in the future. What do you think, Jess?
So I'm the girl who literally dug paper out of my trash at work to put it into the recycle bin today. I did that today at work because I made the mistake of throwing it away, dug it out, took it over to the recycling bin. However, I am opposed to this because, like you said, I'm kind of a traditionalist when it comes to my IndyCar racing. And don't get me wrong, I love hybrid cars as far as street cars and whatnot, but I don't want my racing to be that, at least not yet. I think there needs to be some more time put into it before it becomes a big racing deal, but that's just my opinion. So I'm going to go with a no.
Perfect. I think we're actually kind of unanimous on that. So thanks for the question there, Michael. Goodyear. Is that the new nickname? I kind of like that.
Me too.
Yeah. Welcome back, Jess. We got some more Fastest 33 debate input, our new favorite debate going around on social media, but we haven't gotten Jess's thoughts on that, so I think we'll get that here in a second. But as far as who kind of chimed in this week, so I think we had touched on the fact that Oriel Servia chimed in last week, but then J.R. Hildebrand and Graham Rahal both came out against guaranteed entries at the Indianapolis 500 for qualifying. Hildebrand's argument, per usual, was very well thought out and coherent as far as he was basically stating that as soon as you turn the Indianapolis 500 into a corporate-style mentality where we have to satisfy sponsors instead of having the best 33 make the field, that's where we start losing the luster of the Indianapolis 500. And 100% agree with that. But Jess, since you weren't on the show last week, I'm going to go ahead and bet $50. I know where this is going, but do you want to share your thoughts on Fastest debate?
Yeah, so I threw it up on Twitter maybe the day after this whole debate started. And I put it in very simple terms because I'm not trying to argue with anybody. I think people are getting way too heated about this right now. But frankly, no. It should be the fastest 33 period. And my whole thing is if the owners are worried about their sponsors leaving because their car didn't make the field for whatever reason, then maybe they should be looking at different sponsors, because those sponsors clearly aren't in line with IndyCar. If they feel that, you know, they should automatically get in the 500, they don't know what IndyCar is about. And so maybe those aren't the best sponsors to have in the first place. So I am all for the fastest 33, and I think it's a shame that there are people who don't want it to be that way anymore.
Yeah, word. And kind of a follow-up question, since we got Mike's opinion on it last week. So, Mike, are you surprised that more drivers haven't come out and kind of stated an opinion yet?
Yes and no. You know, I feel like if you're a Penske driver right now and you go, well, I don't care what Roger Penske thinks, this is what I think. You know, especially if you might be on the hot seat, probably not a good time to speak against your boss. So do I wish Will Power or Pagano or Newgarden came out and said something? Yeah, sure. But am I surprised they haven't? No, I am surprised we haven't heard more in general, but at the same time, I'm surprised there are drivers speaking out like Graham Rahal and Hildebrand. I guess I'm not surprised Hildebrand, you know, he thinks everything thoroughly and shares his opinions. But no, it doesn't really surprise me. I don't think they want to stir the pot too much and rile up their bosses. It's definitely a never a good thing in any field to have your boss riled up.
Yeah, it'd be one of those things where Pagano would tweet and go, don't! And like Roger would text him and be like, what are you doing? So Roger would be like, have you watched the 95 bump day yet? So yeah, but I think it would be cool to see more drivers come out and support the fastest 33. However, like Mike said, it's not unsurprising to not see that. So moving on. So we did have, speaking of Indianapolis, we did have some couple tests this week. Today is Tuesday. And so yesterday, Monday, there was the road course test. And then right after our recording last week, there was the oval test, the very crucial oval test for teams and drivers to try out some of the new aero pieces and to just get a feel of the cars and things like that. And there was two sessions. So there was kind of like a veteran session, quote unquote, and there was a quote unquote rookie session / veteran refresher for some of the guys who are not full-time drivers. And so for the top five for the veteran session, Takuma Sato led the way. So good for Sato. He actually had half a mile an hour on the field over second place Ed Carpenter, Spencer Pigot, Will Power, and Hunter Ray were the top five. The bottom three were Kimball, Chilton, and Kanaan. So pretty cool to see Sato P1. As far as the veteran refresher / rookie test, Colton Herta is having a good start to his career. I'll tell you what, he was fastest. And not only was he fastest in that session, but if he was in the, you know, kind of other session, the first session, he actually would have been P5 out of everybody. So that's pretty fast for him. Followed by Castro Neves and Servia, who was in that Schmidt car. Bottom two in that session were Hildebrand and Alonso. And I'm going to shamelessly segue into the fact that I, in the last episode, said that Alonso would struggle. David said that Foyt would struggle. Kanaan was P last, and Laced was P17 out of P20.
I really enjoyed the P last comment there.
Yeah, it was just the best way to say that. And then, Mike, did you get around to figuring out? I don't know if you found out what your prediction was for the negatives on that one.
No, I honestly didn't even think about it after we talked about it this morning. But
that's okay. I know you said you said that Hinch was going to do well.
Yes,
and I said Rossi was going to do well. I don't remember off the top of my head what David said. Hinch was P15, Rossi was P10. So I guess we were both kind of off on that one. Anyways, Jess, anything stand out to you from the results or anything you wanted to comment about, you know, maybe like Sato or ECR having a good day?
First, can I just be the first one to say that it is officially May? So, moving on.
Oh, it's 12:01. It's technically 12:01.
It is May, y'all. Anyways, Matt, you said somebody's name who I think you were expressly supposed to not say his name tonight.
Yes, Matt, you messed up.
Oh, I did. Oh, gosh. For those at home, there's certain words I'm plugging in the episode because I asked for it on social media. But one fan at home said I couldn't say Alonzo, and I already failed. I feel like I
you
owe
made it 15 minutes.
A sincere apology. It's 11:01 my time here. You cut me some slack. I haven't sworn yet.
I don't know what the time has to do with that, but okay.
I'm tired.
Okay. So as far as the test went, I think Herta was the biggest surprise. I mean, obviously he has had a really good start to the season. I mean, I don't think anybody can argue that, but I was still a little shocked because Indy is a whole different beast, and to see him do as well as he did, I was really impressed. I obviously didn't make any predictions on who would be faster and who would be slow, but I probably would have been wrong. So I wish they would have had more time. Weather was kind of sucky, but I think it's going to be a really interesting month, honestly.
I really wanted to say Herta was my surprise of the week last week, and Jess stole that from me. So I'm going to say that Foyt being so slow was the surprise to me. And now I know it was, you know, Kanaan had a fuel leak, I believe. So his, 20 mile an hour lap average is not really representative of what he could have done, or obviously even a real lap. But so I think that was most disappointing is, you know, coming into to May last year, Kanaan started well and obviously had a good race before his crash. And to start out or can kind of continue the negative trend they've had this year is a big disappointment so far.
Yeah. And to Frayed Ends 89 at home, I am sorry I said Alonzo. That's my bad. I'll try again next week or whenever I get back here. But as far as test goes, I think the biggest surprise was actually the guy who owes me $5 at the moment, which is Spencer Pigot. For him to finish P3 in the session is definitely a good sign. He had a really good race actually last year, minus the speeding penalty, which I know is kind of a big if or kind of big asterisk per se. But, you know, he was right up there in top nine pretty much right up until that penalty. So definitely got to keep your eye on because he is, in my opinion, going to be right up there with Ed Carpenter because they both looked really well starting off the test. And then, like I said, yesterday, Monday, there was the road course test just for some of the Honda entrants. Or I think actually all of the Honda entrants. And so the top five from that session are our man Colton Herta, followed by Scott Dixon, Felix Rosenquist, Jack Harvey, and Ryan Hunter-Reay. Not really too much to talk about there other than the fact that Colton Herta, again, had a really good session and is having a good start to his career and whatnot. And I guess the only thing we can touch on further here is a fan question, and we'll toss it over to Mike.
Yeah. Thank you to Jason Camps for the fan question. His question was, so the first couple hours of the session were a bit rainy. So the only person who went out on rain tires was Sebastian Bourdais, who was also the only one to go out on rain tires, on the last test that rained at some point last year. What are our thoughts on that? Essentially what he wants to know, positives, negatives. I think it's a very Dale Coyne thing because, you know, he's trying to, you know, see how the car is going to react in rain, not only for the Indy GP, but any of the road and street courses for the rest of the year where he can gamble on strategy. Anytime that, you know, Dale Coyne can gamble on strategy, he's going to gamble on strategy. And if he can gain some sort of leg up by learning a little bit in the rain, it's definitely a good thing. Am I surprised that Bourdais was the only one? Not really, only because, you know, every part on a car is so expensive. If you make one wrong move and damage a wing, there's $75,000 out the drain for, you know, a couple laps. So I get why a team like Dale Coyne would do it, but I also get why a Penske or a Ganassi or Andretti does not test in the rain in this circumstances. I don't know what Matt thinks.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't hurt to get a refresher as far as what it would be like to drive in the rain, because they don't do it too often, to be honest. Maybe two or three times a season, and maybe just one or two races a season. And, you know, May, Indianapolis, you know, the weather can be crazy. It can be sunny, sunny, sunny all week, and the forecast will say sunny, and all of a sudden race day will rain. So I don't think it hurts to get the extra data and just get the feel for the car, especially on a wide course like the Grand Prix track. If it was like Toronto, I would see maybe why it would not be the best idea, because it is much easier to crash there than it would be at the Grand Prix. But yeah, I think it's something that I would do if I was a driver and just get the extra data and extra baseline just in case it does rain for the race.
I'm going to have to agree with you. I think that you're kind of silly to not use the time you're given, because you're only given such a limited amount of time anyways. I understand that the risk of, you know, messing up your car is there. However, if you don't go out and try to act like a hotshot in a test, then you should be okay. So I think they should use the time. But again, I can see why they don't, if they want to be conservative. But yeah, if it rains, he's definitely going to have a leg up on the competition. So I personally think they should, but I guess it could be completely financial also.
Perfect. Perfect. So thank you again, Jason, for the fan question. We'll actually kind of segue right into another one here. Go ahead, Jess.
All right. So Andrew Barker at F1 Andrew wants to know, who is going to be the big surprise for the Indy 500? Matt, what do you think?
Biggest surprise for the Indianapolis 500. I wanted to say that it was going to be Tony Kanaan. I'm not very high on that pick anymore since the tests happened and he and Lace didn't look too good. And I know there were some issues there that Mike had touched on. But as far as the biggest surprise, I think we may see one of the Ed Carpenter cars win. And I know that's kind of shameless because they did have a good test. But I think this could be one of the defining moments of a career for a guy like Spencer Pigot. Or a, you know, look back at your career and bask in the glory of winning the Indianapolis 500. It would mean so much to Ed Carpenter if he had won that race. You know, he's kind of been the daddy of that speedway for qualifying and for a lot of the races he's been very competitive in, but for one reason or another, just never came together. Or even like, you know, last year, he's top three all day and finished second, even though he led a good chunk of that first portion of the race. So I think the biggest surprise is that we may see something good out of Ed Carpenter, or with Ed Carpenter's engineer going to Graham Rahal, that he could be strong too. So I would stick with Ed Carpenter Racing, and I think they'll actually be very, very competitive again, just like they were last year.
I like it. I am going to go with a one-off team or entry is going to win the 500 this year. Maybe J.R. Hildebrand, maybe... who else we have? Is Helio considered a one-off?
Technically, yes.
Kind of. I'm not going to include him in this.
No.
You know, maybe
Kyle Kaiser.
Maybe Kyle Kaiser. Probably not. So, you know, maybe James Davison pulls out a better showing than he did last year. But yeah, maybe a Hildebrand or Sage Karam, or I know probably some people are groaning at that, but. He is fast. Also, shame on whoever made this list. I am looking at on Wikipedia that has Townsend Bell in the 29 car this year.
Wait, really?
Yes. If you are go on Wikipedia for the 2019 Indy 500, which is where I grabbed the list real quick as we started talking about this question, the 29 car Townsend Bell Andretti Autosport. I wish I could see who edited this. So maybe, yeah,
something we don't know.
I doubt it. No. But yeah, I think it's going to be a one-off entry that wins this year.
Okay. I can dig that. I mean, it's a little bit of a stretch, but not with some of them, I suppose. I think that my surprise of the 500 is going to be Connor Daly. I don't know that he's necessarily going to win, but I think he's going to show people that he does actually belong here, because I know there are some people who question that. But I think he's going to come out, and I think he's going to give it a fighting shot, and I think he's going to do really well. I definitely see him finishing in the top 10. probably even the top five if he can have a little luck on his side, which is always what Indy is about. Whether people like to believe it or not, you got to have luck to win Indy and to do well there. So I'm going to say Connor Daly.
Awesome. And thank you again, Andrew, who was on Fan Night for us a couple weeks ago for that question. Really appreciate it. We're going to move on to Snub the Host. I'm going to explain the rules tonight to you guys. So I'm going to start with Jess, and I'm going to ask a question. And if Jess doesn't get the answer right, then Mike, you have the chance to steal that answer and take a point. And then for the next question, I'll ask Mike, and if Mike doesn't get it, Jess does, can steal, and so on and so forth. So I'll kind of usher you guys through this. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you guys a driver nickname, and I want you to tell me which nickname that belongs to for that driver. For example, if I was talking about Formula One and I said Iceman, you would say Kimi Räikkönen. Does that all make sense?
Yep.
Yep. Okay.
We're going to start with Jess and kind of shamelessly segueing into that. Nobody's nickname on here is Spaghetti, just FYI. But shamelessly starting with Jess, I'm actually going to go with the IndyCars Iceman. So who is that, Jess?
Scott Dixon.
All right, that's 1 point. Some of these are going to be a little easy. I'll give you that. And some of them are not going to be very easy. Mike, the mayor.
Hinchcliffe.
That's a point for Mike. All right, Jess, Lionheart.
Dan Weldon.
That's a point for Jess. Mike, the Rocket.
The Rocket. Oh, God. Not Danny Sullivan. SOB. Yeah, Jess, go ahead.
Johnny Rutherford?
Oh.
No, it's not.
Rick Mears?
Rick Mears is the correct answer.
Oh, yeah.
So that's now it's 2-2. So we're back to starting with Jess here. Supertex.
AJ Foyt.
Yes. So 3 points for Jess. Mike, the Thrill from West Hill.
Why does Jess get the easy ones? this is collusion.
Collusion. Oh,
the Thrill from West Hill. Go ahead, Jess. I definitely don't have this one.
Yeah, I no idea on that one.
That would be Paul Tracy. Jan Beekes does mention it about every broadcast back in the day. So it's 3-2, Jess, onto her. The next one is the Gas Man.
Oh, I should know this because I remember hearing it, but I'm drawing a blank.
It's a little bit of a throwback.
I'm drawing a blank.
Mike, any ideas?
Yes, because I was watching the one of the old Indy 500s the other day. Tom Sneva.
Yep. So it's 3-3. Mike, yours is King Hero.
King Hero. Oh, God. What's that guy's full name?
Because he's like, oh, it's Hero, but like...
Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
He's just that one guy that got in everybody's way. That doesn't really narrow it down, though, does it?
Hiroshi... I don't, out of respect for him, I'm not going to try to butcher what I think his last name might be.
Jess, any ideas?
No.
It's Hiro Matsushita, or as Paul Page said, Matsushita. Matt Gruenholz once pointed out to me that Paul Page like messed up his name about 47 different times in his years of broadcasting there. But anyways, we're still at 3-3, and now it's back to Jess. Mad Max.
Max Shelton?
Oh, no. Jess. Max Pappas.
Max Pappas is correct. Mike, you got 4-3 lead. On to you. Danger Mouse.
Danger Mouse.
Oh!
I know Jess knows this one.
Danger Mouse. SOB. Go ahead, Jess. Tie it up.
Darren Manning.
Darren Manning's correct. We got a couple left here. So I have 4-4. Jess, the racing dentist.
Oh, my God. Of course, because now I'm going to go blank. Jack Miller.
Yes, correct. 5-4. Mike, I don't want to hear anything about being easy on you here. Speedy Dan.
Speedy Dan. Danny Sullivan.
Oh, Mike. No. Jess?
Dan Clark.
Yes, Mike, we talked about it like a week ago.
I know. I always forget about that Dan Clark existed.
Oh, sad. We love you, Dan Clark. 6-4. Couple left. Jess, the Flying Hawaiian.
Oh, I have no idea.
Mike?
Shane Victorino. I know that's the wrong sport.
What sport is that?
Baseball. I used to play for the Phillies.
Danny Angayas was the Flying Hawaiian, if you didn't know that at home. Down to two. And so, Mike, this one you'll get a hint. It's not Mikhail.
Okay.
The Mad Russian.
Oh, I've heard this in old broadcasts. Yeah, I don't. Jess wins.
Jess, what do you think? Got it?
No, I don't have this one.
Billy Vukovich. Finally, we'll wrap it up here with Jess. 6-4 lead, so congrats on winning. But one more for good measure. The Little Pineapple.
What? No, I have no idea, but that's awesome.
I am going on Amazon to buy a little pineapple for our media station.
Please do. No, I have no clue.
Mike?
I got nothing for you. Oriel Servia?
So the story is that Mo Nunn was talking to his driver on the radio, and he said he was driving the car like a fruitcake. And so that race, I believe it was Long Beach 96, what Alex Zanardi did was put a pineapple on his helmet and actually kept it there for, I think, the rest of his career. And so Mo Nunn started calling Alex Zanardi the Little Pineapple. So that's just a random story there. There's all kind of a cool backstory to kind of all of these nicknames here. Like King Hero, it's obviously a kind of a joke because Hero was very notorious for being a lapped car. That would not be the easiest guy to get around, but yeah, the Little Pineapple is probably my favorite. That or Danger Mouse. I really like Danger Mouse for some reason. But anyways, Jess, congratulations. You're the winner on that one. Thanks for the host. We will move on to kind of a bit of a bummer news on the week, which was Stefan Wilson officially came out and said that there would be no Indy 500 for him. I think it was Racer said he did have a long shot at getting the Schmidt car, but unfortunately that never happened. I know we don't really have to touch on it too much because I know all three of us have stated that we would really like to see Steph Wilson in the car, and for him not to be in the field is a bit of a bummer, but hopefully it's just a minor setback for bigger plans in the future and hopefully a ride next year. Laguna Seca ticket sales are up, according to Racer and the track president there. The sales for the tickets are ahead of what they were expecting, and they said once they released the tickets, the sales were very encouraging. So that's a good sign for that track and venue, especially since the county has shelled out a lot of money for that sanctioning fee. And then finally here, the JW Marriott, which has done something to their hotel, I believe, every season since the 100th Indianapolis 500, is once again adorning their kind of like the side of their hotel with some sort of art, kind of promoting the Indianapolis 500. And it's always super cool when I come to Indianapolis for the 500 to see how much the town embraces that. I don't know if you guys have, where is it? Is it right downtown, Jess, Mike?
I'll let Jess
answer. Yeah, it's right downtown.
Okay. I really want to stay there at some point. It looks super cool. And downtown Indianapolis kind of seems pretty cool. And I've heard a lot of good things about the restaurants there. And
I mean, they rename all the streets for the month of May. The street signs are already up, so.
I didn't see any of them say, you know, Grill or Erickson Hit Me. I was kind of hoping for one of those with Baku around the corner. Oh, but
God.
There was a lot of those. There was a lot of untenable memes about Erickson hitting Grosjean and all that good stuff. And if you don't know what we're talking about, it's just a joke from last year. But kind of quick rapid-fire news there. But, Mike, if you want to give some Patreon shout-outs.
Yeah, we're going to split it up and do half the list this week and the other half next week. And that's a good thing. Thank you to all the new subscribers the last couple months. So thank you. Let's start with the newest one as of like 25 minutes ago, Jess's dad, Steve. So thank you, Mr. Baker. Let's keep in the family here and go to Matt's soon to be brother-in-law, Tyrone. Thank you, Stephen King, Stephen Clark. Thank you to Mr. Sean Crawford. Mike Silver, see you in 8 or 9 days. Mike Knapp, see you next week. And we will wrap this week's Patreon shout out with a shout out to Michael Goodyear.
Yes, thank you everybody. We really appreciate everybody's support. And if you're interested on how to become a Patreon member, you can actually just go to the Patreon website and search Pit Lane Parlay. Super good time, and we appreciate everybody's support. All right, we got a couple more fan questions here. It was a little bit of a slower news week, but we're definitely going to make up the time with some very good fan questions, and we appreciate all the fans who did submit those this week. So, Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, shout out to our buddy George, Butts is Nuts 4 on Twitter. Wanted to know, would Pato be a potential good fit if McLaren was a full-time team next year, which, you know, again, sounds likely, but we shall see. I think it would be a great fit for him to kind of, you know, go into a seat where he would have some amazing support, you know, behind the scenes, and who knows what they do as another driver, but McLaren can bring the sponsors that, you know, can help fill out what Pato might not be able to in terms of money, and would give him really a good foundation to, you know, to grow long term. So I do think it would be a good fit. And you know, quick Patreon shout out to all of the Patreon members who took over the Patreon Twitter group last night and compared every IndyCar driver to a member of the Avengers and confused the heck out of me, because I don't know what they're talking about. But it was about an hour long conversation. So there's some good stuff going on Patreon that we connect everybody and have a good time. And it was pretty funny to watch all of the comments unfold last night.
Yeah, my boss at work told me that there's going to be Avengers movies. Like, they're only through phase one, and there's like phases two and three, and it ends in 2038. And it kind of made me a little sad. If anybody follows me on Twitter, I'm not the biggest Marvel fan. Out of respect for a lot of you, I'm not going to spoil Endgame, but I kind of want to, but I'm not going to. But kind of back to Pato. Oh, yeah, and it was a really good conversation. So we do appreciate the Patreon group text. It did get to the Marvel, which, like Mike, I didn't know what was happening, but that's okay. Pato being at McLaren, I like it. I don't think it's going to happen, though. It's if I had to realistically think what would happen, I think it'd be Alonso splitting a seat with Hildebrand. For some reason, Hildebrand and Alonso are friends, or Hildebrand and Zach Brown are friends, or it looks like Hildebrand keeps lingering around McLaren. So if I had to assume that there was going to be one thing that happened, I think they would just split a seat. Alonso would do like six or so races, and Hildebrand would do the rest, including two cars at Indy. But that doesn't change the fact that Pato would be a good fit at that team. And for him to go to a team that didn't need a driver to bring sponsorship, or at least what it looks like, a team that doesn't need to have a driver bring a sponsor from what it appears from the outside world, I think that'd be a good fit for Pato, who doesn't really have that mega backing right now. So yeah, he'd be a good fit. I just unfortunately don't see it happening.
I agree that I don't see it happening. I think he's a little bit risky yet. Obviously, this season is still fairly early, but he makes some moves that could come back to bite him. And I know McLaren is not hurting for money, so don't get me wrong there. But as a new full-time team, they would want, you know, somebody who's going to bring the car home and have a good showing in the points standing, and I think he might be a little bit risky yet. I don't get me wrong, I think he's a great driver, and I fully love his driving style, but I think for a team like McLaren, it might be a little bit much. So I'm going to say not next year, at least.
All right. So that brings us to Jess, you're up next with the second to last fan question.
I sure am. I see that now. Okay, so Stephen King at Stephen V. King, and not the author Stephen King, as we like to point out, would like to know, does ECR need a clean sweep in their drivers after their underwhelming start to this year? I'm going to go ahead and go first on this one. I'm going to say no. I think that is not a great idea for them. I personally think that Piggott does a really good job for them. So I think that keeping him around would be a good idea. I am not a fan of switching drivers every year just because you don't have a great year. I don't necessarily think that's the best for the team atmosphere. But maybe that's just me. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, you know, I've been definitely disappointed in Ed Jones so far this year. But I think he gets a pass currently because of his injury from the first race of the year. You don't know how much that's been affecting him over the last couple of weeks. And Piggott really was in line for a good Barber race until the strategy just didn't go his way at all and completely backfired. So I don't think so yet, at least for Piggott. He's shown some flashes so far this year and obviously had a good test last week, which is a good sign going into the most important month of the year. So not yet, but definitely some signs of disappointment, I'll say.
The only thing I'll say about the injury is that Joseph Newgarden broke his collarbone and then 2 weeks later went to Road America and finished P8, which is one of the most physical tracks in the schedule. So I don't know if that injury, I wouldn't use that as a free pass for Jones. I think at some point he probably should be held accountable and maybe in the team meetings say, you know, we got to step this up because he's been consistently slower than Piggott. I don't like the idea of changing their drivers at this point in the season. I would never fire Spencer Piggott. I think that would be a huge mistake. I think Piggott's had a lot of things out of his control this year go against him, and I think he's a brilliant driver. He's got so much promise, and yeah, these things just keep happening to him that are kind of out of his control. Jones, yeah, I'd like to see him step it up, but I think I'd say he has probably until Mid-Ohio to kind of figure it out. And if we're still getting to Mid-Ohio and he's still not doing a whole lot, that would be a cause for concern. And one driver that also should be held accountable is Ed Carpenter. I know Ed Carpenter's not going to fire himself, but it seems like outside of Indy, especially last season, Ed Carpenter had a pretty bad year, which has gone along with successive pretty bad seasons. I mean, Piggott showed him up at Iowa. Carpenter crashed Wickens at Texas. Pocono, he was kind of nowhere. Just kind of one after the other there. So, I mean, I would love to see Ed just go to Indy only and then just field someone else in the ovals or just give Jones full time or whoever the second driver full time, in my personal opinion. But definitely, it would be stupid to fire Spencer Piggott for sure, 100%.
All right. Matt, you have the last fan question before we get to our lovely pitfalls.
Well, great. Sorry, I'm actually kind of distracted too. I'm looking at Sponge Daddies on my phone. Anyways, the last fan question here is from Michael Goodyear again. He wanted to know where we see some of the Indy Lights contenders fitting in with IndyCar. And something he kind of added on to that was that sometimes we get some Indy Lights drivers who do really well and make a good name for themselves, but then when they get to IndyCar, they kind of fizzle out. A couple of recent examples that you could say would be Kyle Kaiser, who is, it's still a little maybe too early to tell for him. However, he's only going to be in potentially three races this year in IndyCar, which is not the greatest situation. Pato, if he doesn't get a budget next year, it could be in one of those situations. Hopefully that team picks him up, but again, too early to tell. A guy like Rafael Matos was in IndyCar for like two seasons. Hideki Muto was in IndyCar for two seasons. Sage Karam fizzled out to now just being Indy only. You know, you can just keep going on and on. As far as the current names, I think Oliver Askew does have a bright future in IndyCar. I would be hard-pressed to see a seat opening up at Andretti unless it was Rossi leaving. So that might be an open seat there. But Hunter Ray, Andretti, and Veach, I don't think are going anywhere. And then Clayman DeMello, if he learns a thing or two and comes back to IndyCar with maybe a budget, if he finds a new sponsor, I definitely could see that happening. Hopefully some of these new teams come up and a guy like David Malukas can to follow suit. But yeah, you always run the risk of a driver who does well in Indy Lights, unfortunately, just if he doesn't get in the right situation in IndyCar, can be a name that we forget about in a year or two. What do you think, Jess?
Yeah, I have to agree, like, with almost everything you said. The one thing I don't see happening is Clayman DeMello coming back, and maybe that's just me, but I said before that I thought it would be almost career suicide for him to go backwards, and I still feel that way. But yeah, I think that the next season for them is going to be tough, but I think that, you know, the guys who have the talent, the guys you already mentioned, I think they have a shot. I mean, there are some teams that are looking at expanding. There are some teams who may come to fruition. You're talking about like McLaren or whatnot. So I think there will be seats available. It's just a matter of timing and, unfortunately, also financial aspects, which we all know is part of it. So I don't think that all of them are going to fizzle, but I think that we could see a couple, unfortunately.
Well, hang on, before Mike goes, Sebastian Saavedra went from IndyCar to Indy Lights. How'd that work?
Yeah,
that
no comment.
Would that be that was crazy.
All right.
I just helped prove your point. Okay, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, and I wanted to help further prove that point. 2010 Indy Lights champion. How many can remember the illustrious career of J.K. Verne? Exactly. Tristan Vautier won in 2012. Gabby Chavez won in 2014. Now, he did get a year and then kind of part of a year last year. But so it's definitely possible. But looking at the 2019 Indy Lights list, like Matt said, Oliver Askew has a very bright future ahead of him. And I think he will be able to find sponsorship. Rinus VK, I think, might need another year of Indy Lights after this year. But he has shown some really great pace this year. And probably the best part about Arenas, at least for an IndyCar team, is he has sponsors and he's got a lot of money behind him. So, from that aspect, he'll be, he'll be able to get off the ground and running. And Zachary Klammann, as he is now called, I don't know.
I don't believe it.
Well, again, I'm only going off of Wikipedia here, but I don't know. I have trouble seeing him back in a full season IndyCar going forward, kind of like Jess said.
Yeah, and interesting to see what the Indy Lights season is going to turn out. Freedom 100 is always a riot, so that should be pretty cool. I know a bunch of people in the Fantasy League will probably be picking Chris Windham. I still have to figure out who I pick. Oh, gosh. Maybe we should save that for off the air to get some advice from you guys. But, yeah, I feel like I had one more thing to add, but I can't. Oh, what was his name? J.K. Verne. I believe he kind of just pissed off and went to sports car, didn't he? I think that's what happened, because he obviously won the scholarship to move up to IndyCar, and he was like, nah, I'd rather do, endurance racing or something, which was super weird, because if you go back and look at that field, there was like Kimball, Plowman, Saavedra, Mann. I don't know if Beatrice was in it that year. Hinchcliffe, Cunningham, what you can look back at is just like a loaded field of, pretty good Indy Lights drivers. And the fact that the guy who won didn't even race an Indy car was kind of weird. I don't know what to make of that. We should do like a case study about it.
Yeah. That'll be a Patreon episode.
Yeah. I don't think his career ever actually ended up doing anything meaningful.
I'm looking on driverdb.com, and it's a lot of touring car series, kind of lower end sports car series. Nothing too. I mean, he's won plenty of championships as he's gone overseas. Porsche Carrera Cup, France, Belgian Audi Club team, a lot of random sports car series, which are probably fun to watch, but are definitely, touring car racing Benelux.
Sounds like the fifth warm up series to an IndyCar race, if you ask me.
Yeah, exactly. So,
maybe all the power to him if that's what he wanted to do, I guess. I am going to judge, actually. Anyways, pitfalls. Jess, we missed you last week, so do you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. So I'm not even really sure on mine exactly who to pitfall here, because there are several parties that need blame. I don't even know how to describe it other than that. So this past Saturday at Toledo Speedway, the Super Sprint had a race. And during, I believe it wasn't even the race, I believe it was just hot lap, a car got turned sideways. And I'm talking in vague terms, because honestly, the video I saw was pretty not great quality, and I cannot tell who is who in it, so I can't tell you who was involved. But a car got turned sideways, and the flagman of the series, of the Super Sprint series, waved the yellow flag. However, the yellow lights did not get turned on, and here come the rest of the field, and they just plowed into him at full speed. So, Super Sprints did not allow the drivers to have spotters at this particular race for some reason. For whatever reason, the yellow lights did not come on after the flagman threw the yellow flag. And also the radio that the sprint car drivers use for some reason was not functioning. So they were not hearing that there was a yellow flag either. So again, lots of blame here. We can blame super sprints. We can blame the flagman. We can blame the other drivers who should have seen him turn sideways across the track and yet continued to plow on head first. I mean, we'll have to post the video, but I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I mean, it's a miracle. Like, from what I understand, everybody walked away, and it is a miracle that everybody walked away because it could have been so bad. I just, like I said, there's a lot of people to blame. I can't throw the blame at one particular group or person, but obviously I hope that Super Sprint is looking at this and figuring out exactly what went wrong, and they are going to fix this. Some people who raced in the series before or race sprint cars in general have chimed in talking about how unbelievable this whole situation was. And I mean, you know, it really could have been somebody's life or, you know, their future ability to walk or whatever. So the fact that it appears that everybody walked away pretty much unscathed is a miracle, but somebody needs to sit down and really take a look at this.
Yeah, that was bad. I don't have to add too much other than that. That was all around bad.
It's like a systematic failure of multiple things.
Yeah, everything went wrong at once.
That's a very good way of putting
Murphy's
it.
Law. Yeah.
Matt, you want to take it?
Yeah, absolutely. Because mine's always about Ferrari usually. All right, so this week, the ever so brilliant Sebastian Vettel, who's like the pitfall gift that keeps on giving, came out and said that someone had asked him, you know, Mercedes has now won, was it 16, 17, 18? So they've won three straight constructors titles, and actually they won 15 too, I think. So they've won four in a row now. And now that they've gone 1-2 for four straight races, the reporter was just asking, you know, what his feelings about that were. And he said, boring, isn't it? So boring. It's not just four races. It's been 4 years, more or less. Oh, my God. For the guy who won every freaking F1 race and championship from 2010 to 2013 to come out and say that it's boring when one team dominates for 4 years is so frustrating. I had to sit through, and all of us had to sit through countless Red Bull wins from 2010 to 2013, and it honestly, for the cars, there were some pretty good races in those years, but to watch Sebastian Vettel would repeatedly win, I was bored. And for him to say that it's now boring for another team to do what he did for 4 years, which at the time I'm sure he thought he was a brilliant driver, and that I don't care if I'm beating the field by 2 seconds per lap, and I don't care if my teammates inept and things like that, to come out and say that now it's boring just because it's not him that's winning, to me, was really stupid of him. Doesn't look good. I don't think sometimes he thinks before he talks. I don't think if he's just thinking about these things when he's spinning out repeatedly on track, but I really don't like Sebastian Vettel. I don't know if you guys have noticed that at home. I will find pretty much any excuse to pitfall him. And again, he just keeps giving me reasons to pitfall him. So that's going to be my pitfall. I'll just leave it at that. I hope Mercedes keeps winning just so he keeps losing, and get tuned in for the rest of the season, I guess.
Yeah, I really am tired of Mercedes winning, but at the same time, if Ferrari keeps having their terrible strategy, Sebastian needs to complain about his team and not the other teams.
100%.
And unfortunately, to wrap up my pitfall, I do not have anything to pitfall George Russell about this week.
What? What about the drain at Bakken? Yeah,
that was embarrassing. But again, well, you know, yeah, that's what Russell gets for driving at 98% instead of 100%.
There you go.
Going back to my pitfall from last week, but you know, wrapping it up here, I'm going to take a NASCAR turn on this one. Before I get to my actual pitfall, just something I've seen on Twitter, and I actually watched most of the race on Sunday, and it wasn't a bad race, at least to me, it was okay. But I know everybody's probably going, is Mike okay right now?
Are you okay?
I'm okay. But the Fox TV coverage is atrocious. I mean, it's the worst TV coverage of a motorsports event I've ever seen. Commercials every three laps. There's no momentum. I don't know how, outside of hardcore NASCAR fans, a casual fan can get excited watching that on TV when they don't see anything going on. Not to mention some of their camera angles are bad. And if I hear boogity, boogity, boogity to start another race, I'm going to have to drink a lot. That being said, after the race, our buddy Adam Stern came out and said, as part of the switch to the new Generation 7 car, which I don't really know if that's next year or 2 years down the line, to be honest with you, but NASCAR teams are asking the sanctioning body and racetracks to help foot the bill for most of the expenses to switching. Partially, you know, obviously new chassis, new components, etc. Okay. If teams are having to ask the sanctioning body and, track owners for money to switch to a new car, I just feel like, you know, Adam Stern marks it as an unusual move that signals teams still believe the sport's revenue distribution is out of balance. I think what Adam is trying to say is NASCAR has a money problem and the teams can't figure out what to do. And that's really my take on it, is maybe not pitfalling the NASCAR teams so much, but there's obviously a very serious cost issue, you know, kind of going back to the whole hybrid engine in IndyCar and keeping costs under, you know, a certain amount so teams can thrive. If teams are struggling already and the car hasn't even been built, I think it's a bad sign.
Yeah, I got nothing to add, Jess.
Yeah, I think the only thing I can add is maybe NASCAR should focus on some other things before they focus on building a new car. But that's just me. There's a lot of issues there. But yeah, obviously the team's asking for somebody else to pay the bill for their cars is obviously a problem. Something's not right. They need to start really looking at things.
I'm going to start asking my CEO if he will pay for my mortgage every month. I will also follow up next week and let you know how that goes.
Yeah, that's I think instead of doing whatever they should be doing to fix NASCAR, I think actually they're probably looking at changing their playoff format for next season.
Probably, because that will generate less interest but more money.
Right, exactly.
And with that, thank you to everybody listening. Lots of May coverage coming. Matt will be off the next 2 weeks because he decided to get married. We can tease him all he wants, but congratulations, my friend. Hope you guys have fun.
Appreciate it.
Jess, go ahead and sign it off.
And guys, keep your lug nuts tight.